Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 14, Brahma's Prayers to Lord Krishna, Text 12. Ud shep panam garba gatasya padayo. Kim kalpate matur adoksha jagase. Kim asti nasti yapadesha bhushitam. Tavasti kukshe kiyat apyati yat apyanantaha. Ukshepanam, the kicking. Garbhagatasya, of a child in the womb. Parayo, of the legs. Kim, what? Kalpate, amounts to. Matu, for the mother. Adokshaja, O transcendental Lord. Agase, as an offense. Kim, what? Asti, it exists. Naasti, does not exist. Yapadesha, by the designations. Ushitam, decorated. Tava, your. Asti, there is. Kukshe, of the abdomen. Kiyat, how much? Api, even. Anantaha, external. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. O Lord Agdaukshaja, does a mother take offense when the child within her womb kicks with his legs? And is there anything in existence, whether designated by various philosophers as real or unreal, is actually outside your abdomen? Purport. Srila Prabhupada comments as follows on this verse in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Volume 1, Chapter 14. Lord Brahma therefore compared himself to a little child within the womb of his mother. If the child within the womb plays with his hands and legs, and while playing touches the body of the mother, is the mother offended with the child? Of course, she isn't. Similarly, Lord Brahma may be very great personality, yet not only Brahma, but everything that exists is within the womb of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord's energy is all-pervading. There is no place in the creation where it is not acting. Everything is existing within the energy of the Lord, so the Brahma of this universe, or the Brahmas of the many other millions and trillions of universes are existing within the energy of the Lord. Therefore, the Lord is considered to be the mother, and everything existing within the womb of the mother is considered to be the child. The good mother is never offended with the child, even if it touches the body of the mother by kicking his legs. Well, Lord Brahma will give some other reasons. This reason is probably not very sufficient. Otherwise, Brahma, he's comparing himself to a child. Brahma is not a child. He's the supreme ruler of the universe. And a child may inadvertently kick when he's in the womb, but he has his intelligence. He just doesn't go around kicking things. And now, Brahma doesn't stay with this one explanation. He has to go further. So there's text 13. My dear Lord, it is said that when the three planetary systems are merged into the water of the time of dissolution, your plenary portion, Narayan, lies down on the water. Gradually, a lotus flower grows from his navel, and Brahma takes birth upon that lotus flower. Certainly these words are not false. Thus, am I not born from you? So now he's trying to give the argument that we're all part of the same family, and family members sometimes commit mistakes, so, but they forgive each other because they're part of the same family. Purport, although every living being is a child of God, Lord Brahma here makes a special claim because he takes birth on a lotus flower that emanates from the label of Narayan. So he's not only a family member, but he's a very close family member. He's not a distant relation. He's Krishna's own child. Ultimately, all living beings are equally expansions of the transcendental body of the Supreme Lord. For Brahma has an intimate relationship with the Lord because of his activities of universal creation. So he uses the prefix V in the word V, Virnirgata, to beg the Lord's special mercy. Lord Brahma is called Aja because he is not born from any mother, but rather emanates directly from the body of the Lord. As Srila Prabhupada states in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is naturally concluded that the mother of Brahma is Narayan. On these grounds, Lord Brahma is requesting special forgiveness for his offenses. Text 14. Are you not the original Narayan, O Supreme Controller? Since you are the soul of every embodied being and the eternal witness of all created realms. Indeed, Lord Narayan is your expansion, and he is called Narayan because he is the generating source of the primeval water of the universe. He is real, not a product of your illusory Maya. Purport. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 2, text 30, Srila Prabhupada comments on this verse as follows. This statement was spoken by Lord Brahma in his prayers to Lord Krishna after the Lord defeated him by displaying his mystic powers. Brahma had tried to test Lord Krishna to see if he was really the Supreme Personality of Godhead playing as a coward boy. Brahma stole all the other boys and the cows from the pasturing grounds. But when he returned to the pastures, he saw that all the boys and cows were still there, for Lord Krishna had created them all again. When Brahma saw this mystic power of Lord Krishna, he admitted defeat and offered prayers to the Lord, addressing him as the proprietor and seer of everything in the creation and as the super soul who is within each and every living entity and is dear to all. Lord Krishna is Narayan, the father of Brahma, because Lord Krishna's plenary expansion, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, after placing himself in the Garbhadak ocean, created Brahma from his own body. Mahavishnu is the causal ocean, and Sharadakshay Vishnu, the super soul in everyone's heart, are also transcendental expansions of the Supreme Truth. In his commentary on this verse, Srila Sanatana Goswami has elaborately explained the expansions of the Vishnu or Narayan incarnations from the original Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. The essence is that although Brahma was born from Lord Narayan, Brahma now understands that Narayan is himself a mere expansion of the original personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. Brahma has understood that he's in difficulty. After all, Indra understood he was in difficulty when he tried to destroy Vrindavan, which is quite a big offense, and therefore he had to bring a Sarabi cow from Brahmaloka and fall down and ask Krishna for forgiveness. Now, Brahma's offense may be relatively less, but after all, stealing Krishna's cowherd boys and calves and cows is quite an offense. Now we ourselves can't do that. We can hardly steal anything and get away with it. But what to speak of stealing Krishna's internal energy, which is impossible. So Brahma didn't really do that. But we find that In the case of Ravana, he didn't steal Sita, but he stole Maya Sita, Vedashira. Because Ravana could not touch the internal energy of Krishna, he was unqualified. So therefore Agni had taken Sita Devi away and substituted the lady who was undergoing austerities, who Ravana, when he was traveling, conquering the universe, came across and tried to seduce, tried to kidnap. But she, when Ravana grabbed her hair with her hand, she cut her hair off and then burned herself to ashes and said she was going to come back and destroy Ravana. So Agni Devi substituted Vedashira for Sita Devi and took Sita Devi to the heavenly planets to wait out the war between the monkeys, Lord Ramachandra and Ravana. In any case, although Ravana had not stolen Sita, still Lord Ramachandra, along with his Lakshman and the monkey warriors and the bears, they went and destroyed Lanka and got back the illusory Sita. Therefore, Ravana was not spared, because first of all, he is opposed to Krishna. Now, Brahma was a little more innocent. He was trying to figure out if this is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as an experiment, he stole the cow boys and calves, not wishing to do them any harm, actually, but just to playfully see if this is actually God. And then when he came back, and all the cow boys and the calves that Krishna had created or expanded into turned into Narayan forms, he was pretty much convinced that this was actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, his asking forgiveness is really based upon the fact that he's a little bit like a child who was just curious and was playing around. And therefore, Krishna should forgive him because it was a playful mistake. And indeed, Krishna did forgive him. He didn't take away his position as Brahma. He didn't destroy Satyaloka. Originally, when Indra started to pour rain down on Vrindavan, along with hailstones, Krishna's first thought, according to the Nectar Devotion, was to destroy the kingdom of Indra, Indraloka. But then he thought that Indraloka is so insignificant, why should I even bother with that? And then he decided to lift Govardhan Hill and protect the residents. So neither Indra is actually a demon, although Indra committed a much more grave mistake, apparently, nor Brahma. And therefore neither of them was actually destroyed. They were chastised. And Brahma wasn't even chastised. Krishna, at the end, just neglected him. Brahma, after Krishna had drawn the curtain of Maya over him, because his mind was becoming so bewildered, seeing the unlimited expansions of Krishna as Narayan, with all the opulence and all the Shivas coming from all over the universe and all the different energies, his mind was just completely bewildered. And then Krishna drew his yoga maya over Brahma so he didn't have a nervous breakdown. And then Brahma was back in Vrindavan with a little coward boy holding fruit salad in his left hand, pilu fruit and some yogurt. And Brahma realized he had made a big mistake and it was time to leave. And even after offering all those prayers, Krishna just neglected him, thinking, who is this weird person with four heads standing besides me? So Krishna, as Krishna was just an innocent cowherd boy, but as we know, Vishnu had expanded within him in his different incarnations, and therefore Krishna's display of mystic power, in one sense apparently, was a display of Vishnu Maya. So Krishna is an innocent coward boy, had just done what he thought was necessary and didn't really take Brahma very seriously. So therefore Brahma went and left and realized that he didn't even bother, Krishna didn't even bother chastising him, because he already had shown Brahma what he was interested in, and practically had bewildered his mind, so Krishna didn't feel it was necessary to chastise him or give him any instructions. Sometimes Krishna does that. When Brahma gave benedictions to Ravana, actually Hiranyakashipu earlier, and Hiranyaksha, then Krishna, after killing Hiranyaksha, well, after killing specifically Hiranyakashipu, Brahma and the demigods were there offering prayers to Krishna. Lord Nrisimhadeva was bifurcated Hiranyakashipu, and Brahma was there afraid to approach Krishna. Only Prahlad Maharaj approached Lord Nrisimhadeva. But Lord Nrisimhadeva took the time to chastise Brahma, saying you shouldn't give benedictions like these to the demons anymore. So there Nrisimhadeva chastised Brahma. On the other hand, Lord Shiva sometimes commits mistakes, and then Lord Vishnu also mildly chastises him and says you should be careful who you're giving benedictions to. You're giving them too liberally. When Rikasura tried to kill Lord Shiva by trying to touch his head after receiving a benediction from Lord Shiva that whosever head he could touch would immediately crack into pieces. Then of course Krishna had a trick Rikasura to touching his own head, and so Rikasura's head cracked into thousands of pieces. And then Lord Krishna mildly chastised Lord Shiva that he should be careful who he give these benedictions out to, because Lord Shiva is Ashutosha. He's very easily pleased. And therefore, he can easily give benediction, even though the benediction may be dangerous to the person who he gives the benediction to, or even others. Lord Shiva is a little indiscriminate. Therefore, many demons approach him for benedictions, because he gives them out quite liberally. So Krishna warns Lord Shiva, should be a little bit more careful in the future who you give these benedictions to. So similarly, Krishna the moral of the story is that Krishna handles mistakes we make in different ways. It's not just one, there's a law. Krishna looks up the law and hands out the verdict. He takes into account time, place, audience, person who committed the mistake, and then deals with them appropriately to help them advance spiritually. He doesn't do things arbitrarily or whimsically, not only for Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva or anyone, also for all of us. Therefore, the devotee prays, Tate nukampam sikshamikshamano bunjan evatmakritam vipakam ridvang vapubdhira. Siddhanam namaste vivetasam mukti padesa dayabhak. The devotee says, Tate nukampam, praying for your compassion, for your mercy, susamikshamano, that I can see things properly, that I can understand actually things properly. Why? Tate nukampam susamikshamano bunjana evatmukritam vipakam, that I can understand that whatever I'm suffering is because of my own past misdeeds. And ridvagvu vapuvirvi didan namaste. And therefore I can go on in any circumstance simply praying for your mercy and meditating on you. Vivetasan mukti sadesa dayabhak. And that way I'll become eligible to go back to the spirit, to become fully conscious of you. Uninhibited, not hindered by my material conceptions of life. So that's what we learn here, is that Krishna is very sensitive and discriminating how he awards punishment, and therefore when we go through some difficulty, we should understand it's also Krishna's mercy not to punish us just for the sake of punishing us, but to rectify some of our mistakes so that we don't make them again, and that we become unattached to the reactions of the material existence, which we have to suffer anyhow in terms of old age, disease, death, etc. So it's not that anyone lives a materially perfect life, and if they're perfectly good, they don't die. Everyone dies. Everyone gets disease. Everyone grows old. And we have to go somewhere after leaving this body. So we leave it up to Krishna to train us, and we accept good or bad as part of Krishna's lessons he's giving us to help us advance in spiritual life. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
You mentioned this episode with Ravana not being able to take the Sita Devi, but how can I understand that Agni Dev could take Sita Devi?
Because he's a devotee. Why couldn't he take it? He's a devotee. Sita Devi was happy to go with Agni Devi. Agni Devi. Otherwise, how can we pick up the deities and take care of them? Anything else?
Thank you for inspiring lecture. I would just like to ask, some advice, how can we avoid making mistakes to greatest extent possible? So how to avoid making some mistakes on the set of,
Well, practice before we do anything. Think humbly, investigate, and think about what Krishna would like us to do. And then when it becomes clear, when Krishna gives us the intelligence, what he wants us to do, then we can do it with conviction, and then whatever we do won't be a mistake, because we're doing it on behalf of Krishna. Anything else? Pala Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.